Let's return to our story of the Absalom coup. We are in 2 Samuel chapter 17, verse 24, where we can remind ourselves that David has evacuated his administration, his kingdom, all the major players in it, some of the civilians that had been from Jerusalem, across the Jordan River, into the hills of Gilead, to the fortified city of Mahanaim, just north of the Yabuk River and east of the Jordan several miles. It's the place where Ishbaal had carried out his operations as the surviving son of King Saul for the first couple of years of David's reign. Since we're talking probably somewhere in the neighborhood of David's 35th or 36th year on the throne, all of that happened a little over 30 years ago. So David has dug in at Mahanaim. Absalom is following the advice of David's planted supporter, Hushai the Archite. That advice was, wait, gather your forces from all over Israel, north to south, and once you have a massive, overwhelming army, then go against your father and his forces. And so that's what Absalom has done. So we are several weeks after the coup began, perhaps even a month or two. So Absalom crossed the Jordan with all the men of Israel. Now, Absalom had set Amasa over the army instead of Joab. See, Joab had gone with David in the evacuation. So the army of Absalom needs a new leader. So he taps one of his own relatives that's in the army. His name is Amasa. Amasa was the son of a man named Ithra the Ishmaelite. So on his dad's son, Amasa is related to Ishmael. But on his mother's side, he's related to David and therefore to Absalom. So this Ishmaelite had married Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, who was sister of Zeruiah, Joab's mother. So Abigail is the daughter of a woman, I believe, named Nahash, who is Joab's, who is a sister of Joab's mom. So Abigail and Joab are cousins. That means Abigail's daughter, or Abigail's son, Ithra, or Amasa, sorry, we've got a chronology issue, or not a chronology, but a genealogy thing here. It's a little bit hard sometimes to express. So Amasa is Joab's cousin once removed. Same thing with Absalom. He is a cousin that is once removed. So it's a family thing. Verse number 26. Israel and Absalom encamped in the land of Gilead. So Gilead is on the east side of the Jordan. More than likely, we're talking about them being in the area between the Jordan River and the city of Mahanaim, north of the brook or the river Yabuk. David came to Mahanaim, when David came to Mahanaim, Shobi, the son of Nash from Rabbah of the Ammonites, this is the new leader of the Ammonites. You may remember several years earlier, just before the whole Bathsheba affair, David had sent some of his people to extend condolences upon the death of Nahash, the king of the Ammonites. The son, who had become the new king, insulted David's entourage and started a war. Well, that war ended after 3 years, and part of the treaty that ended that war put this guy, Shobi, another prince, on the throne. So he is a big supporter of David. So when David came to Mahanaim, Shobi the son of Nahash from Rabbah of the Ammonites comes to David. It's not terribly far from his capital city of Rabbah, the modern city of Amman, Jordan. We've also got Machir, the son of Amiel from Lo-Debar, that shows up here. Last time we heard from Machir, he was the guy that Merib Baal had been living with. You remember the crippled son of Jonathan that David took into his own household. So this is another supporter of King David that is on the east side of the Jordan River. And Barzillai the Gileadite from Rogelim. He's from Gilead, and so these three guys, all from the east shore of the Jordan, are coming to help David out. They are big supporters of his. What did they bring? They brought beds, because there's a lot of evacuees. They're going to need places to sleep. Basins and earthen vessels. You need things to have water in and cook in. And wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans and lentils, honey and curds and sheep and cheese from the herd. You got to have food for all these evacuees. For David and the people with him to eat, for they said, the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. So those three gentlemen showed up shortly after David arrived at Mahanaim and provided him everything he needed to dig in and prepare for the Absalom attack that everybody knew was coming. So now David is recovered enough and he's aware of the forces of Absalom crossing the Jordan River. He is ready now to defend his kingdom against his son's coup. Chapter 18. Then David mustered the men who were with him, and he set over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. This is normal military procedure. You muster out, you call to service the militia. And once you have them all showing up, you have to make sure that they have leaders that they trust and will follow. And so all that's been taken care of. David then sent out the army. One-third of it is under the command of Joab. One-third is under the command of Abishai, so his two nephews that are frustrating to him but still support him. And then one-third under the command of Ittai the Gittite. You remember that Ittai is an ethnic Philistine from the city of Gath. He had 600 Philistine soldiers that swore support to King David after David came and dealt with the Philistines inside the Promised Land. And so they apparently even converted to the faith of Israel. So Ittai is a trusted convert to Judaism and a major player in the military. Then the king said to these men, not just simply these three commanders, but in front of the entire army that he's about to send out into three groups. The king said to the men, I myself will also go out with you. But the men said, you're not going to go out. If we flee, they will not care about us. If half of us die, they're not going to care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us. Therefore, it is better for you to send us help from the city. So David wants to go out and be in the battle. He has the heart of a warrior. He is, like I said, about 65, 66 years of age. He's right around my age right now in my life. I would love to be able to defend people on the battlefield if my way of life was being threatened and the people I love were being threatened. But I guarantee you that I would not be up to it, like all the young people. And so David is told by the younger ones, no, you're not up to it. Besides, if they kill you, it's all over with. So you need to stay behind the strong walls and direct support to us. That's how you can best help. Verse number 4, the king said to them, all right, whatever seems best to you, I'll do. So the king stood at the side of the gate while all the army marched out by hundreds and thousands. And so he is observing and encouraging his supporters as they march out to war, because that's the best thing he can do. But he says one last thing to his commanders, overheard by his men. The king ordered Joab and Abishai and Ittai, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. Meaning, I want you to bring Absalom back alive. I don't want you to kill him. I want you to capture him. That's important to me. And so all the people heard when the king gave orders to all the commanders about Absalom. The prophet writer wants to make that crystal clear for what happens later in the story. So the army went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was fought in the forest of Ephraim. Now this can be confusing. The tribal region of Ephraim is on the west side of the Jordan from here. This is the forest of Ephraim, which is between the Jordan River and the city of Mahanaim. That's all on the east side. It's part of Gilead. So more than likely, it's not named for the tribe, but rather it is named because of the meaning of Ephraim. It has to do with bounty or plentiful. So this is an old growth forest. That's how we would describe it today. It has not been cut. There are big, old trees and a lot of deadfalls in here. So the men of Israel were defeated there by the servants of David, and the loss there was great on that day, 20,000 men. So when the forces collide, God is obviously helping David's side against the Absalom forces. 20,000 of Absalom's forces die that day. The battle spread over the face of all the country, meaning the forest of Ephraim, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword. Like I said, this is an old-growth forest, probably got a lot of undergrowth, a lot of deadfalls. There are places where you can fall into a pit, you can run off of a short cliff, you can get pierced perhaps by running into the stobs of a tree limb that has broken off. A lot of different ways to die in a forest, including wild animals. because, you know, old growth forest has a lot of wild animals in it. So the forest ends up taking more lives that day than the battle did. Now, verse 9. Absalom happened to meet the servants of David. So Absalom is out there participating in the fight, and he just blunders in the middle of the woods across a unit of David's men. Absalom was riding on his mule. Mules were the royal animal for riding. They did not use horses, typically, because there had been a prohibition against horses early on in the giving of the Mosaic Law. And so Absalom's riding along on his mule and blunders across some of these David supporters, and he wheels around and takes off as fast as that mule can go. And the mule went under the thick branches of a great oak. Now, don't think of our oaks. The word actually is a terebinth. The reason they use oak in our language, our English, is because oaks are typically big, massive trees. And so the terebinth is a big, massive tree. It's a large tree. So we're talking about one of the older, old-growth forest trees here with branches going way down close to the ground. And apparently he didn't duck right because his head caught fast in the oak and he was suspended between heaven and earth while the mule that was under him went on. Now you remember, he has a hair overgrowth issue. He takes off a couple of pounds worth of hair every year when he shears himself like a sheep. Apparently, it's not been shearing time yet. And so his hair gets tangled up in these low-hanging branches as his mule is going along at a very high rate, and the mule is like straight out from underneath him. But he is still high enough off the ground that his feet are not able to touch the ground. And my guess is that he may have had his sword out, as a maybe need to fight on muleback when he's going. And when this happens, he loses it. And so he doesn't have anything sharp on himself to cut his hair to get free. And so he is just hanging there from this tree. Verse number 10. A certain man saw it, and he told Joab. Now, maybe this is one of the guys that was in that group that Absalom stumbled across. But he reports to the commander, Joab, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak, in a great big tree, just hanging by his hair." Joab said to the man who told him, "What? You saw him? Well, why then didn't you not strike him there to the ground? I would have been glad to give you 10 pieces of silver and a belt. So I would have rewarded you if you would have executed him on the spot. He's the reason we're having this war. He's the usurper." But the man's response was this. He said to Joab, "Even if I felt in my hand the weight of 1,000 pieces of silver." Now, we don't know what the actual value of these things are. Shekel is not used here. It's just chunk or piece of silver. But it certainly represents a very large amount of money, maybe several years' worth of working payment. He says, "I don't even care if you paid me multiple years of salary. I would not reach out my hand against the king's son, for in our hearing, the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, for my sake, protect the young man Absalom." So there is no way in the world I would have killed the man. I heard what King David said to you guys. He wants him captured alive. So verse number 13, "On the other hand, if I had dealt treacherously against his life, and there is nothing hidden from the king, then you yourself would have stood aloof. This guy seems to know Joab as a person that does whatever benefits him, whatever is pragmatic. He says, if I had killed the guy, if I killed the guy right now for you, and the king found out about it, which he would, you wouldn't defend me. You'd let me die for it. So no, there is no way in the world I would kill Absalom. Verse 14, Joab said, I will not waste time like this with you. And so he took three javelins in his hand. Javelins are like little throwing spears. And he thrust them into the heart of Absalom while he was still alive in the oak. So he goes to where Absalom is hanging and throws these javelins one at a time into his chest to make sure he's dead. Verse 15, he's not alone. 10 young men, Joab's armor bearers, surrounded Absalom and struck him and killed him. So his inner circle, his lieutenants, his command staff, help kill Absalom. And really, we need to verbalize it the way it actually is, based on David's command as the commander-in-chief. They murdered him. They didn't take him down in battle. They murdered a prisoner of war. Verse number 16. Then Joab blew the trumpet. This is the shofar. And the troops came back from pursuing Israel, for Joab restrained them. It's the cut off the head of the snake thing. Absalom is dead. He was the coup leader. The coup is going to dry up now. The people are going to believe that God is on David's side, and David needs to be supported again. That's the way it's going to play out. So Joab doesn't want any more deaths today. He wants to go back and report to the king that it's done. So they took Absalom, and they threw him into a great pit in the forest, and they raised over him a very great heap of stones. Remember, I told you, this is old-growth forest, and there's a lot of deadfalls and probably big holes in the ground of subsidence into cave areas and stuff like that. So they find one of these depressions. They're not going to take his body home to King David. They just throw it into one of these depressions and pile a whole bunch of rocks over the top of it and leave him there to rot. And then all Israel fled, everyone to his own home. That's the Absalom army. Once they hear that their commander, their king, is dead, they go back across the Jordan and they go back home. Verse 18, now Absalom, in his lifetime, had taken and set up for himself the pillar that is in the king's valley. The king's valley, as far as we can tell, is part of the Kidron Valley, right next to the ancient city of Jerusalem. Absalom, before he had any boys, had decided that he needed to make sure that there was a monument that would keep his name alive should he never have any boys. So Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up for himself the pillar that is in the king's valley, for he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. And so he called the pillar after his own name, and it is called Absalom's monument to this day. So the prophet writer was quite well aware of it, and he knew that his readers would be aware of it. I don't believe we have an authentic monument that can be pointed to for this monument. I've heard that some people point to certain monuments, but they don't seem to be old enough. So His whole point, the whole point here is that even though he's dead and in an unmarked grave out in the middle of the woods, he still had a monument just outside the city of Jerusalem. A couple of minutes left. Verse number 19. Then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, remember him? He's the runner that came to the Jordan River to warn David to cross over because Absalom's advice might entail coming after him that very night. So that guy, Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said, "Let me run and carry news to the king that he who is has delivered him from the hand of his enemies. So please, let me be the guy that tells King David the war is over." Joab said to him, "No, you're not to carry the news today. You can carry it another day, but today you shall carry no news because the king's son is dead." Now, why won't he let him go? I think Joab remembers that on two other occasions, David has executed the guy that brings bad news about the death of someone. And so I don't think he's correct in making this assumption, but it is possible that Joab believed that David will lash out and kill whoever brings this news. So Joab said to the Cushite, so this is a man who's not ethnically Israeli, but he is probably religiously Israeli, and he belongs to the Israeli army. He's part of the running corps. "Go tell the king what you've seen." And so the Cushite bowed before Joab, and then he ran. Now, it's going to be several miles, the news at the end is to let David know the coup is over, but also your son is dead.